Welcome to My Perspective. I'm Jalen.
I'm Valentine.
We're joined by a plethora of people. But today we're talking about upbringing. Before we start, I just want y'all to say your name and your year.
Sure.
And your background.
And your background.
So my name is Diego Gulanto Falcón. My background is a first-gen Peruvian immigrant, and I'm currently doing a master's in public health, first year.
That's fire.
My name is Dev Anthony Emerent. I'm American-born but Haitian of origin. I'm currently studying computer science, and I'm a junior.
All right, my name is Alyssa. I'm a biomedical science major. I am Haitian-American.
Yeah. My name is Corpo. I'm studying public relations and advertising, and I am Liberian but grew up in America.
My name is Valentine Noel. I'm a political science student, and I am Haitian-American, born in Haiti.
And I'm Dylan Washington. I'm American but Bahamian descent, and I'm studying sports and marketing. So, before we start, just want to let y'all know it's a safe space. You know, just keep it down with the hate speech. But we'll start from just backgrounds, as far as, like you said, like where you're from. I know you said you're an immigrant, and I know that there's a lot of American-born people here. How do you think it differed, like, your growing up cycle?
Sure. So for me specifically, I came here with the preconception of, like, I should be fearful of law enforcement, but I never knew why. I didn't know I was an immigrant until much later in my life when I was, a teenager. And it was also kind of difficult where, like, I spoke Spanish, and in my class, I was segregated from the rest of my class because I had to learn English. So it was very just weird for me because I never experienced any of that back in my home country. That's just a little bit about it.
Where did you grow up at? Because I know it differs, at least for me. Like, I was born in Miami, moved to Tampa, then moved back to Miami. But while I was in Tampa, I was kind of that black kid in the classroom, you know? So, like, I had to go and be a proper way. That way I didn't come off as rude, or my mom like instilled that in me just to go and make sure I didn't, you know, do that type of stuff. So where exactly did you like grow up? Was it like the city? Could have been like the country, slum suburbs?
So I grew up in Tampa, specifically town and country, and it was majority Hispanic Latino. But for me, I didn't really know anyone else who was an immigrant, and it was kind of like forbidden in a way to say that you were an immigrant, because there was always that negative stereotype that, like, oh, you probably don't have papers. And I also wasn't allowed to talk about how I came from another country. I just wasn't allowed to talk about it. There was definitely, like, majority, like, I went to majority white schools, so it was also kind of difficult where it's like, because I was forced to learn English, I didn't speak Spanish as well, and so I couldn't really hang out with the Latino kids. But I also couldn't hang out with the white kids. So it was really difficult for me trying to find, like, my own group, like, my own clique almost.
Okay. What about y'all as far as, like, this community and, like, exactly where you grew up? Because I know it differs for a lot of people.
Yeah, so personally, I'm kind of weird because I grew up, like, I think I've lived in at least 6 different countries themselves, like...
That's actually kind of fire.
Yeah. So I was born here, right? Okay. But I moved back to Haiti. Then I was like 4 or 5, I left to go to Congo. So I stayed there for like a couple years, and I moved around in Africa. Every 3-4 years, we're always moving around in Africa. So I stayed there. Then I went back again to Haiti. Then I came here. So it was like this whole plethora of countries that I've lived in really low-key shaped how I view people, how I view life. Because, again, Africa and Haiti, majority of people I was around were black people, people of color. Then I came here, to a white school. So he was like, oh, that's really a shocking culture for him.
Yeah. I think for me, I never really face anything like obstacles, because when people look at me, they don't assume I'm Haitian. They're kind of ignorant. They're like, oh, well, you're light-skinned with, you know, this side of the look. You're not Haitian. I'd be like, okay. And it's not until, like, my parents would come around or come up to the school where they're like, oh, your parents have an accent. Like, where is your family? Oh, they're Haitian? Oh, like, again, like, the papers thing, like, making, like, slick jokes, which, okay, or, like, I bring some food for lunch. I bring, like, what, like, do you love exhaustion? And it's like, oh, like, oh, it's a little thing. But other than that, like, I never really faced any, like, obstacles for them, and then, like, other ignorant comments.
So. Okay, where were you? Where were you raised?
I was born and raised here.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I grew up, like, the first couple years of my life in Liberia, Africa. I got adopted when I was around, like, between the age 5 and 8. I say that loosely because I was born during a civil war in Liberia. So a lot of, like, the people had to, like, flee to the woods and stuff. So they didn't keep track of dates and everything. And because I looked so malnourished, I think a common theme in adoptions is they always, most people want to adopt kids who are younger. They don't want to adopt them after, like, a certain age, because they want to, like, oh, I raised this child, da 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 da. So because I was, one, malnourished, born in definitely a third world country, I looked really petite and really young. So they told me I was 5, but I was probably like 2 or 3 years older than I was told. So legally, I'm one age, but growth-wise, I'm another age. So yeah, I grew up there. I was put in an orphanage with my biological brother. I didn't really understand what was going on. I was kind of just like, my mom just dropped me off one day. I was raised in a family of 6 kids, and then my mom and my dad was always working, so I never really knew what that man was. But I didn't really have a concept of, like, anything outside of Africa or anything outside of Liberia. I didn't really know what was going on. And I got adopted into a white family. So whenever I moved to America, my adopted parents, we were traveling. I don't know if you've ever been in Washington, D.C., but at the time it was winter and there was snow everywhere. And, like, this is the first time I'm seeing skyscrapers and everything. And my dad goes, Corporal, does anything look different here? And I go, nope, looks the same to me. Literally coming from, like, mud houses, sand, literally nothing looked the same, and they thought that was so funny. But overall, I was very blessed to grow up in a really good, like, family. I know there's a lot of, like, divide with, like coming to America and learning about it, like, racial tensions between, like, you know, African Americans and just the history of America. But I was really blessed to be raised in a loving family where I never felt a certain way about anything. So just growing up with that, I definitely had a little bit more privileges than a lot of people maybe in my situation did, that I didn't understand that in the moment. But just going through college and seeing everybody's different backgrounds, it's like, oh, okay, like, we all come from different places and it's different.
So how is race, like, when did it become a word to you? Whether that might be in school at, like, first grade, it came a word to me kind of early for me, because I did grow up in, like, the white schools at first until I moved back to Miami. But, like, when did it occur to you that, like, okay, my skin or my ethnicity, whatever the case is, people look at me a different way, or they might perceive me a different way?
Or was there a time where you weren't quite sure why? Like, for me personally, like, before I understood race, color, I would, like, notice the different experiences, like, that I would receive compared to my peers. And all the times I would be like, I would put it on myself rather than, like, seeing maybe it's because I'm a different color, until, like, I understood. So was there, like, that point for you guys where it transitioned from, for me personally, I had to transition from self-blaming myself for the things I experienced to actually understanding, no, this is happening because of my race?
I think for me personally, elementary school and just, like, receiving treatment from white American teachers when it came to my white peers, and like the things of how when it came to labeling our behavior, like, okay, my white friend who would talk out loud in class, it would be funny, but for me it was disrespectful. So I think that was it for me. Yeah, for sure.
For me, I didn't really, like, even though I knew that I was, like, different than, like, my parents, like, my parents were very good at keeping my culture alive and making me feel, like, still involved with my culture and my identity and stuff. So even though I knew I was adopted, it was never really an issue of, like, me feeling different, like, at least in my core family and the friends I had. I grew up dancing, so I feel like it didn't start being a problem until, like, I'm put in a room with only white girls. We're all looking at ourselves in a mirror, like, literally for hours straight, like, learning dance moves and stuff. And then when it would come to, like, dance costumes and stuff and, like, getting tights for dance, my teacher would only order one color. So it was, like, there was, like, no, not her being, like, rude. She just didn't really think, I don't know what it was, but my mom would literally have to take the tights and we would have to dye them my skin color because the dance industry didn't have a lot of representation in the Black community and, like, dance tights that matched my skin color. So we would literally have to, like, hand dye it a couple of times. We would have to, like, put makeup, like, all over my tights, like, make it match my skin. So mm-hmm. I feel like, dancing and growing up dancing is really whenever I started realizing, like, oh, like, I can't do all, like, I don't have the same background as you. I don't look the same as you because when you're put in front of a mirror every single day and everyone else looks the exact same and then you're the only one that looks different, I feel like you start to, like, be like, oh, okay, like, I am different than you guys.
I had a similar experience, but this is actually really recent because this was in high school for me. I was part of a dance team and we wear, like, it's like full body leotards and they're supposed to be your skin color because mm-hmm. we had costumes that were, like, cut out and we can't show, like, our actual skin, so we would have full nude leotards. And my dance coach, she bought me black leotards, like, not like black, like, actually black leotards. I was like, you want me to wear, like, I was so confused. Wow. Like, she actually bought me, like, black leotards. I'm like, no, I'm not wearing this. Yeah. Like, and it was actually crazy. Like, and it was, I think at the time there were three black girls on the team. Everybody got their shade, but we got the black one. That was insane for me. But yeah, I had a similar situation. And she's a really nice woman, but I'm just like, how do you miss that? You know?
Just the ignorance.
It's
not being considerate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The differences in the room.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my similar experience.
Personally, me, it was, like I said, I grew up in Africa and Haiti, so majority of people I knew were black people or people of color. So it really happened when I came to college here, like, 3 years ago. So the shift wasn't as bad as I thought it would be because, again, I used to come to the U.S. like for the summer sometime. So I already knew kind of like, okay, there were differences on how I was treated and how somebody else was treated because of my skin color, because of my race. But when I came here and started to actually live here, the differences were so much more flagrant than what I thought before. Because I think it wasn't even only what was happening to me or what I was going through, but it was also just seeing the news, seeing what other people were going through, hearing stories and everything. I was like, oh, okay, that never happened to me because I wasn't around those type of people. So when I came here and I started hearing all the stories, I was shocked, but at the same time, I wasn't. Like, in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm not surprised. So yeah.
I think for me, it was probably in school, but also, like, in my general community, like, with Latinos, there's a lot of colorism. And so when I was growing up, I had really faded white skin, so I didn't really look like I was Latino. And so there would be a lot of like slurs and also just like rude insults thrown my way because I didn't look Latino. And especially like back then, I didn't really have the hair for it either, because my hair used to be really short, but obviously growing it out now. But yeah, I definitely noticed it within my community, and not even towards just me. It was also towards like other Afro Latinos that I knew. They would definitely get like a lot of slurs as well. But yeah,
I know that's from like the school, and I know school is just school. I ran into a situation where, like I said, while I was at like the white schools, kids would make rap songs and I'd get reported for it. Mm-hmm. So I understand that. But what is, because I know there's a contradiction between the household and school. So what is a stable, did y'all grow up in stable homes? Or no, honesty or not, I was flippy floppy. You know, like it differs. Like for some people that grew up in stable homes versus like homes where there's like a lot of just issues, and I feel like that plays a role into like the schools. If y'all want to, y'all can comment on it. But
I think for me, I definitely didn't grow up in a stable home. I mean, I don't remember any of it, probably repressed somewhere in my mind. But when the first couple of years that we were here, well, it was actually, so my dad, my uncle, had left Peru first to come to the U.S. And even though my mom didn't want to, she eventually followed after him, mainly because my dad had lied to my mom saying how great it was over here when really he was struggling. And then within the first year, there was a lot of domestic abuse towards both my mom and my older brother. I don't remember any of it. But that definitely, like, you know, my dad ended up going to jail after that. He's still with us now, and he is a lot better. Still, you know, stubborn in his own ways, but he's, you know, he's definitely gotten a lot better. But yeah, I wouldn't say that my home was stable in any sense of the word. Yeah, on top of like other things that happen regarding like housing insecurity and food insecurity and all this other stuff related to like my citizenship status growing up undocumented. But yeah,
I would imagine that all of that wouldn't really help with school also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
All right, let's go again. Let's get happy. Did anyone play sports at all? Did okay. Yeah. What sports do we play?
Soccer.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. What position did you play?
Right back.
Okay. I played center back. I was horrible at it, but I played. You feel me? The reason I asked that is because I know with growing up, there's a difference between boys and girls.
Mm.
Like for instance, like obviously I'm closer to my mom, but like when it came to like sports and stuff like that, like my dad forced that upon me to go and play sports. I played baseball, football, basketball, soccer, you name it. I ran track and I hated it. You feel me?
Yeah.
But I know that there's a difference when it comes to like boys and girls. How do you feel like that played a role in your life?
I don't think it played a difference when it came between like my siblings and I. And my cousins, I think it was all encouraged for us to be involved in something,
mm-hmm.
whether it be music, art, or sports.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I have siblings. I have one brother, and there's four of us, three girls, one boy. And I think there's definitely a difference in the way we're raised, but of course we're all pushed towards education. Like, my brother, he was never really pushed towards sports, although he did sports on his own, but my parents never pushed that on him. It was always education. But in the sense, the way we were raised, of course, we were raised with patriarchal standards. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the woman, he's the man, I cook and clean, he needs to get a job and provide, so... definitely with the patriarchal standards, but for me personally, it was always education, education.
Do you have any sisters?
I do.
Are you the oldest sister?
No, I'm the second oldest. Mm-hmm. My oldest sister, and you can tell because my oldest sister is studying for MCAT to go to med school right now. Mm-hmm. I plan to go to law school, and my brother, he plans to study engineering. So, mm-hmm. like, you can obviously yeah. see the push right mm-hmm. there. So, yeah.
I think that's a good, just bouncing off that, like, the oldest daughter thing. When it comes to the patriarchal standards and like the oldest daughter has to take care of everyone in the house, and I feel that heavily, especially yeah. growing up in a Haitian household, you need to be, not only do you have to be on top of your stuff, but you need to watch over your siblings, and many of the times whenever you get fed up with that, you end up being the black sheep of the family because you speak out about it.
Very recently, there was a situation in my family with my brother, because he's in his senior year of high school. And oftentimes when they need to discipline him, I'm getting called.
Okay.
And that just recently happened. I'm having, like, a lot of tests going on, so I've just been ignoring my parents' calls because I don't want to deal with that right now. And I just, like, responded to them, like, yesterday. And it's like I have a kid I'm raising, you know? Right. Like, but... yeah, it's just kind of the norm for us yeah. in a way. No. Even though I'm not mm-hmm. my sister, I think she's fed up. She does not answer Jones. Any calls. Yes, yeah. mm-hmm. She does not answer any calls. So it kind of just fell on me, and I'm just like accepted it in a way because I was just like, I guess it's my turn. You know, I don't know, but yeah.
And it doesn't justify it. You know, it's not yeah. a healthy way to. Raise your kids or have that type of dynamic in your family, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to immigrant families and coming here. I don't know if you have any sisters. Do you have any sisters?
Younger sister. I'm the middle child.
Oh, okay.
And it sucks. Yeah. yeah. Yeah, no, similar to you, my older brother got fed up, and so now all the responsibility is on me.
Yeah, yeah.
But thankfully, she's 18 now, so, like, mm-hmm. now I push it on her. oh, wow. She hates it, but it had to be done. I'm in grad school now. Mm-hmm. I can't be dealing with that. And she, you know, like, I told her everything she needed to know, you know, taught her how to drive out the door,
set
you know.
Up.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously, like, I'm still in the household, so, like, if they ever need yeah. anything, mm-hmm. I'm there to help. But I just hope that they don't call.
yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel like there's a conversation that needs to be had about how immigrants and Caribbeans and Latinos really parents push their own responsibilities onto their
hey,
love children.
Hey, let me cook.
Let's snap.
Yeah.
Speak on it.
At the same time, I feel like sometimes I understand because, you know, they're coming here trying to find a way to make everything work, you know. Mm-hmm. It's their first time in the U.S. They're trying to find jobs. They're trying to pay rent. They're trying to send their kids to school. So, obviously, they already have a lot on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, you have a lot on your plate. So your way of coping is pushing some of those responsibilities on your children. And you're driving those people out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way you're doing it in a harsh way that's like, okay, do this. You're not telling them why. You're not explaining anything. You're just saying, either you do this or, you know. Yeah.
Also, and we're usually really young, so there's
also,
so
yes.
much we don't know. We're trying to figure out, and then we're placed with these responsibilities, and it's a huge weight to carry around, personally.
Yeah, I think the main consequence of it all is just it's emotionally draining.
Mm-hmm.
It's emotionally draining. And personally, like, being that, like, my parents, like, expecting me as the oldest daughter to be, like, educated and then be involved in these sports and these talents or whatever, and then also, like, try to keep up with the house chores and, you know, like, all that is just, like, can I breathe? Like, you know? So, I think that's
and
the
also,
main thing.
And also, there's just, like, a pressure to please your parents in a way. I know I personally feel that pressure. Yeah, and sometimes I wonder, like, do I want to go to law school for me? Or is it because of my parents? Yeah. And then at the same time, I'm just like, it's going to benefit me. So it's just like, why not? You know, I don't know. But
especially since, like, I'm sorry. Or
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Especially since, like, our whole lives were really told, okay, you're going to college to either be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. So it's like every time somebody feels like that's what they want to do, they don't know if it's for them or if it's for their parents. And it's like, it is such an identity crisis that is, okay, I'm doing all this. I'm putting all those hours onto this. I'm studying. I'm doing exams. I'm sacrificing a lot. Is it for me, for my own happiness, or is it for them?
That's really interesting. I feel like, just coming from my background, my family did not stress as hardcore as, like your families did, of, like, you can only be a doctor, an engineer, or whatever. It was very, like, do whatever your heart desires, which is very different from, like, my friends who are African or from, like, different... like, just a different background than me. My family taught me to be really well-rounded. I had to play an instrument. I had to get good grades. I had to play a sport. Like, just everything. I had to be well-rounded in everything. But it was up to me at the end of the day to choose the path I wanted to choose. I never had that, like, pressure. And I'm the second oldest, too. So it's not even, like, it's not even that. Like, we're all just individually allowed to be whatever we want to be, and that could just be a white culture thing that I'm just not having experienced before. But I also have recently, like, throughout COVID, my biological family has reached out to me, and I've, like, done a couple, like, video calls with them and stuff, and I can definitely feel what you guys are talking about through those conversations, because now it's almost as if, because before I didn't really know why I was adopted, what was going on. Like, this is like 17 years of my life, never talking to my biological mother ever again. And then poof, she's just magically here again. And I feel this sense that her goal was, I was supposed to come to America to bring back what I've learned in America to Africa and to take care of the family. It's basically the vibe I'm getting. So that's a lot to, like, be dumped on all of a sudden when my entire life I'm raised, it's okay. Do whatever you want. And now it's like this high responsibility of kind of we brought you here so that you could help us in the end, pretty much. It's kind of the vibe I'm getting. Not in any, like, disrespectful way. Yeah. It's just a cultural difference than what I'm raised with. And I'm, like, now being exposed to. And it's like, okay, like, what do I do with this information going on for the rest of my life? How am I supposed to contribute to my family in Africa now, because it's, like, my responsibility.
You said that you had siblings, right? Were they adopted with you, or?
No. So I have older siblings, only the two youngest one, me and my biological brother. We got adopted together, and then don't really know where my other siblings are, but one of my brothers, he, like, recently contacted me and my brother and was like, hey, like, we would love to chat with you. But the thing is, you have to be really careful, because once you start being a provider for, like, that type of situation, it's kind of expected that you have to be that for the rest of life. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, how to navigate this, how to build a relationship, again, that I've really never had, not in any disrespectful way, or, like, this is not coming from because of hurt. I just don't really know these people, even though they're my biological family, if that makes sense. So it's really interesting, like, obviously, to see your backgrounds of being pushed to be the best and to have the best jobs, and I'm over here, like, not having to do that. Like, obviously, I want to have a great job, like, who wouldn't want that? But it's definitely a different focus just with my upbringing.
It's kind of weird. Like, literally.
It is really weird.
No, I say it's weird because I experienced something similar, even though, you know, I have my biological parents growing up. Like, me and my mom, we still have this running joke where I told her when I was, like, 8, Mom, I want to be a Papa John's delivery man so I can go and work and then go home and I could do that. Like, it was a running joke, right? And she, like, never, like, I guess she kind of influenced me to, like, go and get the higher jobs, but she wasn't like, you have to do this, this, or that. Like, to this day, I still tell her, like, I'm still trying to become like a sports agent, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, I commend you for that. Go ahead, do what you want to do with your life, but I'm going to go and support you all the way through. So, like, especially hearing that, because I see it on me, how they don't force me to do that, but with my sister, in a way, they kind of, like, force her to do that, even though I'm, like, the older one, right? Mm-hmm. So my family dynamic is a little weird. I have a brother. He's on my dad's side, but I didn't see him as much growing up because I didn't have a phone growing up. You know, also, like, just growing up, it's a disconnect because he's not inside the household. And I have my sister that she was, like, me and her, she was my right hand until we were, like, 16 or 17. And then we had, like, more siblings. I have a big family. But, you know, I'm still, like, the, in a way, I'm still, like, the guardian of them. Like, I'm still a big bro. They know everything goes kind of through me, and, like, I have to set that example. But with me, they weren't as harsh as they are to my sister, even though I'm the older one. It's kind of weird how my family dynamic is, but, you know.
It's interesting.
I feel like that's, I'm not surprised by it, personally. I feel like I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I just feel like parents overall just, I mean, this might not be true, but in my experience, for my peers, they're just harder on the girls. Like, the expectations are higher, and you don't get as much leeway to just make mistakes as your brother would. Like, some things my brother have done, I probably would get my head cut off. Like,
right.
So, I don't know. I just feel like...
I agree.
Yeah, I just feel like the standards are different. Yeah.
No, you're right. I feel like the pressure is definitely more... It's definitely bigger on girls growing up. Especially, you know, in... Or kinds of families.
Right.
But, I wanted to go back to what you said about, you know, being the provider also. And what you said is definitely true. Once you start, it's very difficult to get out of that space. Because once you start, they'll expect more and more and more and more. And then when you don't do it, now you're the bad guy.
It's done until you pass it on, though. Because, like, I've seen, like, especially how you pass it on to, like, your siblings. So, obviously, I've been, like, that head of my siblings. Not my brother, is still my brother. Me and him, we play 2K every day. But, like, you feel me? Like, it's me, and then it drops to my sister. And, like, I haven't seen it with my sister. When I went to college and she was the oldest sibling inside the house, she chose to stay back home. Mm. And, like, she goes to college close to home. That way she's closer to the kids because they're younger. Mm. And she feels like she has that responsibility to, like, yeah, I gotta be every step of the way, this and that, or in cases, whereas I could be kind of like 4 hours away, I could just...
More carefree.
Right.
And I think that's probably due to, because I feel like a lot of women were raised to just take care of everyone around us, so we often don't consider ourselves. So I feel like I don't know her. I really don't know her. This is just purely an assumption. But I feel like if it was up to her, she would probably move. But because she feels like she has that duty to take care and nurture everyone, she's choosing to stay closer.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to get too much into the business. But, you know, like, it definitely was, like, a sense of, like, she felt like she was obligated to stay because I think she could have went to, like, the school out of state and it would have been paid for.
Yeah.
Whether just, like, she still got her school paid for, but, like, she wanted to stay close to family.
She didn't want to feel that guilt as soon as she moves away.
Right.
Mm. Right. I felt that.
Yeah. Like, even my sister, like, she's like, micromanaging me. Not in a sense, but, like, my older sister, like, she doesn't really talk to my parents, but she talks to us. Like, she'll take me, Fondine, when was the last time you studied for your LSAT? And then my brother, Robin-D, have you gone to the Learning Center so he can study for his LSAT? Just, like, constantly reminding us. So, like, we're always on top of our things.
You know, think back. How did your parents raise her? Because now she's self-deflecting those same behaviors onto the younger siblings.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's so true. Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. That's... Wow. Yeah. Yeah, she is. Yeah.
She may not realize it, mm-hmm. but yeah.
I'm glad that our generation is able to have conversations like that so openly, because it means that this will not be perpetrated, like, onto the next generation and the next and the next and the next. Because, you know, those are, if we're honest, those are toxic relationship, toxic, not, you know what I mean. Like, they're not things that should be perpetrated. Because even the whole daughter thing, like, I would not want my daughter to feel that way. I would not want my daughter to feel, oh, okay, I have to take that responsibility where I have to take care of my siblings, where I have to do this, you know. Mm-hmm. I would want her to be able to make her own choices and be like, okay, this is what I want to do. And I'm doing it because I want to do it, not because I feel obligated to do it or because I feel like I have a duty to do it. And going back to the sons now, I would want, again, we were raised in a way that, like, obviously not as strict as the daughters, but still, like, okay, you have to be the provider, mm-hmm. right? You have to have the main job. You have to do this and that. One of the things that always came up was, okay, you have to be the strong one, right? You have to not show certain emotions. You have to be able to take things upon yourself and deal with it by yourself. So I'm glad that it's not going to be perpetrated. Like, my son, if my son is feeling some kind of way, I want him to talk to me. Mm-hmm. I want him to be able to tell me, okay, this is what I'm going through. And me giving him advice for it, yeah.
Okay, so I feel like we've highlighted some of the negative aspects of how our upbringing impacted us. So what are some positive traits you feel like your upbringing has instilled in you and has helped you throughout your life and y'all's perspectives?
I think I would probably say resilience. Because looking back, like, everything that I went through, as much as it sucked, I probably wouldn't change it, because mm-hmm. then it would change who I am today. And no matter how small the change may be, it's really made me the strong, charismatic person I am. And I wouldn't want to change that for the world, no matter how many times I have to go through it again.
I feel that, yeah. Me, I would probably say it really helped me be goal-driven. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to do something, I'm going to find how to do it. Like, I'm just going to not, I'm not going to be like, oh, okay, I want to do this. That's too much, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to find ways to, okay, if I have to break it down, I'm going to break it down. If I have to, you know, get somewhere first before I'm able to go there, I'm going to get there first. So, yeah, definitely that.
I think, yeah, just jumping off what both of you guys said, like, my parents, especially my father, being Black in America is a not easy thing whatsoever. So, like, being in rooms full of white people, my dad has always reiterated the fact that they can say whatever they want about your skin color or the way you look, but they cannot remove that degree from your name. They cannot mm-hmm. remove your talents from you. So you carrying that power and knowledge and talent or skill or in your career, they could never take that from you. And silence has more power to it than you think, always.
I would say I've learned a lot of, like, the importance of leadership and being, like, goal-oriented. I grew up in a family where, like, everyone, like, was a boss. My mother was my principal. My dad was in healthcare administration. My grandpa's a doctor. Like, just always used to people being in leadership roles. So even though I had that leeway to pick whatever career I wanted, I've always been attracted to leadership. I've always been ambitious just because of what I was modeled, and I feel like it's helped me a lot in, like, my education and the things I get involved in and just the lifestyle I want to live altogether. But I would also say my family, just like the opposite of what you were saying, what you were experiencing, well, you were the only Black person in the room, and, like, always to remember that they can't take that away from you. Me always being the only Black person in the room in my family, the only Black girl, I feel like I kind of just got, like, used to it. Like, oh, this is how it's always going to be. And I just kind of got numb to it. Never really thought of it being any other way. And then I came to USF and I was exposed to so much diversity to the point now, like, when I am the only black person in the room, I can, like, sense it versus whenever I grew up in it. I didn't really sense it that much, but just changing my surroundings and just the friends I'm with at USF and at college as I grew up, it's definitely been, like, a shift. But I appreciate the upbringing I've had because, like, while there's a lot of going on with racism and stuff, I get to see it from both sides. Like, I get to, like, not feed the fire, but I also understand the others. Like, you know, my friends who are African or in the black community and the oppressions they face from that, but also bringing in, like, light. Like, not every white person is like that. Like, not my family. You know, I really never had to feel, like, my entire time growing up, I never really felt, like, racism from my immediate family or the people around me. Could just be the town. Like, I just happened to be lucky in that sense, but I know for a lot of my friends, they don't feel that same way. So whenever they come home to visit my family and, like, they're around white people for the first time, they're like, wow, like, this is really different than the stories I was told or the way that I was taught to fear white people. And I'm like, oh, like, not that you should, like, there's obviously issues out there. Like, that's not the goal of this. It's just, like, it opens up your mind that not everyone's like that and not everyone is out to hurt you. And I feel that helps me raise my own children and have my own legacy of inclusivity or not making anyone feel excluded and having that background of being black and also knowing how to live with people who look different than you and teach them about your culture and things like that. So I would say overall, like, I appreciate the way I grew up because it's shaped me into the person I am and how I see, like, race and things like that.
You're not safe, though. You're not safe. You gotta say something.
For me, I feel like how I grew up, it always made me want to learn. I feel like with my family, we're kind of self-sufficient. Like, there's not some, like, my mom learned to sew. Like, she would sew my clothes. She would make me clothes. And not that we didn't have the money to buy clothes, but it's like, she was, I don't know, my parents were always learning. Like, my dad builds things, even if he doesn't know how to, he's going to figure it out. And then me coming to America, I was always learning new culture, new language, and I just love learning. And I feel like where I came from and how I grew up made me just love learning, and I'm probably gonna be in school forever because I just love learning, you know. I don't know,
going back to what you just said, I'm probably not going to be in school forever. I definitely understand what you mean when you say you love learning. Because, again, moving around so much and being in, you know, spaces where I was pushed towards, you know, learning as much as I can, being good at school, being good at the arts, playing piano, being good at sports, it just, like you said, learning became such an important part of life that it's like, I came to love learning. Like, I came to, okay, this is interesting. Let me learn how to do that. This is interesting. Let me learn how to do that. And it's like, that's probably one of the more positive things that really came out of my whole childhood, my whole growing up thing, because it's like, okay, that's actually something that I want to instill in my own children. I want them to love learning as much as I love learning. Yeah,
and going back on that, like, I really want them, like, I think it's the importance that USF gives students or schools that are big on diversity is that learning of different cultures. Like, yes, I generally enjoy learning different cultures, learning different backgrounds. I feel
learning,
like,
different perspectives.
Yeah, like, I've grown in my knowledge of just cultural backgrounds and, like, differences when you're around people. Like, I don't think I go a day without hearing 5 different languages, you know, as I'm walking, you know. Like, I can look at someone and be like, oh, I understand why they're doing that. This is important to their culture. And I think that's something USF brings students, and it brings people together from different backgrounds that I want to make sure that whenever my children, like, they also get to experience. You don't only have to stay in this box. Like, you don't only have to surround yourself with these people, like, to encourage them to go out there and to seek new knowledge and learn from other people and, like, take and utilize different ways of looking at things and different ways of doing things, which is super important that I feel like growing up we probably all have learned.
And I also feel like when you're not exposed to like different perspectives, different cultures, your world is very small. Mm-hmm. And when your world is so small, I feel like you're less imaginative, you're mm-hmm. less creative. And when you learn about different cultures, different customs, your world becomes bigger. You can think more, create more. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it just makes you smarter, in my opinion.
All right. Well, I guess it's just, I got to say my last name, right? All right. Well, I think the biggest thing in my life is that because I had to go and move because I was around so much was taking that chance on yourself and also not being afraid to go outside that box. I think with friendships where the case is like, if it just doesn't work, it doesn't work. But trusting in yourself that you will get to your end result, especially in taking that chance, not being afraid to like just do the normal, doing your own thing, paving your own wave. I think that's the most important thing for me, that I push it on my siblings, I push it on people around me to be yourself. Take that chance. But since I do have to, you know, I gotta skedaddle soon. Before we all leave, because I just remembered that I didn't do this, my bad, guys. You guys can shout yourselves out, any clubs you're in. That's the last thing I'll have y'all do before y'all gotta go. You know, I'm holding y'all hostage until then. But just going to say your name one more time. If you're in any clubs, you can say that. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, so my name is Diego Lulanto Falcon. I'm part of the Latino X Graduate Student Organization, as well as the Latino Caucus in Public Health. And I also try to advise the Undoc United group as well.
Okay, my name is Dev Anthony Emmerich, and I am part of NECRA Incorporated, and I'm also part of the Club Creole Dance Team.
My name is Alyssa Randonville. I've just recently started getting out and getting into clubs. It's like the biggest thing I've done yet, so yeah, no list yet.
My name is Corpo Parks. I am the president of PRSSA, it's a public relations society, and I'm an RA. That's about it.
My name is Valentine Noel. I'm part of a lot of orgs. my perspective, we're here. Black Men Law, Phi Alpha Delta, the list goes on, but yeah.
And I'm Jalen Washington. why are we laughing at my last name? And I'm playing with y'all. Podcast chair for my perspective. Now, for anyone listening, if you do want to share your story, we encourage you to DM us and be ready for the next podcast. We out.
Yes, DM with ideas, anything. Yeah.
Can I get a bye from everybody?
Bye.
Oh.